With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
And we're back here on ESSR Central, here on Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet. After a two-week break, we are back with a Revolution review and a small look ahead to WrestleMania, the road to WrestleMania well and truly heating up. And we'll look ahead to some of the matches that have already been booked. But our main focus today is an AEW Revolution review. And join me for the first time, what feels like an eternity, by way of Mexico, sorry, coming from Mexico City by way of Clarkson. He is.
Oh, you know what? It's great to be back. And to be honest, I'm not surprised Central didn't go on the last couple of weeks, because you can't have Central without yours truly. And I've finally switched off of my Buzz Lightyear Spanish mode and I'm back to get into the nitty gritty of what's been going on in the wrestling world, because I've been out the loop for quite a while.
I was about to say, wait, put yourself over there and then go, I've been out the loop for a while.
But it just goes to show, like, I could go away for a fortnight, come back straight into the presenting gig, like I've not missed anything at all, and I still do, like, just as much presenting compared to most people here.
We've had this argument about who does the majority of presenting here on Suplex Retweet. We'll not get into it again, but... Just before we kick off, just remember you can find all our back catalogue, reviews, previews, interviews, all the news, Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet, iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, and all good Android podcasting sites. And of course, at Suplex Retweet, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, you name it, we're on it. Right, AEW Revolution, coming to you live from the Chase Center in San Francisco, California, this past Sunday, March 5th. A 9-match card, which is not surprising. They've reduced the number of matches from usually between 13 to 16, considering the main event was a 60-minute Ironman match. But I was surprised Tony Khan was able to contain himself.
You know what? It does make for a nice change. But even still, a 60-minute Ironman match on a 9-match card is still quite a lot, all things considered, because... mostly WrestleMania night one tends to be about 8 or 9 matches, and that's without a 1-hour match going on. But then again, it could be argued that some of those matches on a Mania card can go as much as 20 to 30 minutes apiece. So it's almost like, you know, the NXT formula, less is more. You get lengthy matches with fewer matches on the card. But in this instance, AEW is just sort of like, it's a bit of a paradox here, because they've actually got matches that have went respectable lengths, even though it's still a pretty stacked card, all things considered.
I obviously had this conversation with you before we came on, that I was watching it live and I thought I'll probably see 5 matches, like, because I didn't have any faith in Tony Khan to rein it in with the match times. Mm-hmm. I was quite surprised that just before 3:30 UK time, 2.5 hours into the show, we were heading to the main event. MGF was making his entrance, and usually about 2:30, we've probably got about 6 matches left. Sorry, 3:30. But yeah, fair play to Tony Khan to rein it in, given the main event stipulation. Me, Stephen, spoke with Grant as well, spoke with Scott about this. a weird pay-per-view going into it. It had a lot of interest around the main event. The Texas Death Match certainly was something we were looking forward to. We knew there'd be blood. It was a John Moxley match. Mm-hmm. And not much else really got a lot of press. You know, some feuds that have maybe not heated up the way people want, or some feuds that have maybe been put to the side and went on too long or couldn't have been helped through injury. But a lot of good matches on this show. I wouldn't say a genuinely terrible match was on this show, but there was quite a bit of filler that going into it, it didn't generate a lot of buzz compared to other AEW pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could name just a few matches that you could tell immediately were felt like filler. Like the four-way tag team match, I think, was one of them, looking back at highlights. Probably, and I hate to say it, but again, because it was the only women's match on the card, that also felt like a bit of a filler, because it was the shortest match on the card, but clocking at about 10 minutes. But it did have some storyline development towards the end, so I suppose I can give it a bit of leeway. But I think the other one is probably the TNT Championship with Wardlow and Samoa Joe. Those two have been going back and forth for some time as well. This felt like almost like a rubber match between them, and it didn't really feel as satisfying a conclusion.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's kick off with the pre-show. Mark Briscoe and the Lucha Brothers going up against Aria Davari, Josh Woods and Tony Nese. This was a decent six-man tag match here, but my main gripe here is this is the definition of filler. What do Tony Nese and Davari add to this company? They've went from pre-show in WWE to pre-show in AEW. It's not exactly an improvement if you've just moved from one big company to a slightly smaller company's pre-show. Like, it's not an improvement. But yeah, Mark Briscoe being kept quite, being pushed quite strong still with the tag title, still being recognised as one half of the World Tag Team Champions. Good to see the Lucha Brothers get on the show. It's always a good match with those guys, but really not much to say about this one other than why would you sign Davari and Tony Nese?
I think it's more criminal that the Lucha Brothers are being put on the pre-show. I mean, they're probably one of the best tag teams going in AEW. Like, why not put them in the four-way match for the AEW tag titles? I would have rather have seen them than, say, maybe Jay Lethal or Jeff Jarrett. And I'm sure you would agree on that, knowing your mutt-heavy adoration for Mr. JJ. But then again, Orange Cassidy and Danhausen felt a bit like filler in that match to begin with. Like, the Lucha Brothers, I think, would have added much more to the AEW tag title match than just being shuffled in on the pre-show.
I think we'll talk about it a bit more depth when we talk about the Fatal 4-Way match, but I felt that match was one of my favourite matches on the card because I felt everyone got a chance to do their shtick. And, you know, the whole thing about Jay Lethal and Double J is that they're wanting respect and they're not getting it, so they're kind of being treated like a joke. Mm-hmm. So it worked with them there. The Acclaim trying to get their rematch. They'll obviously eventually get a singles rematch down the line, I think. And Danhausen and Orange Cassidy, the comic relief. So I felt everyone kind of got their own thing in there, whereas I don't think it would have made sense for the Lucha Brothers to be there, because it's just another title loss for them, sort of thing. So I think just keeping them strong, keeping them warming up in the background is a good thing. Not everyone can be in the title picture at once. So that's my thoughts on the Lucha Brothers.
Well, we
talk about the opening match, Ricky Starks versus Chris Jericho. This, by the way, I liked this show overall. I'm going to be very full of high praise for the trios match, the death match, the tag match, and the main event. However, this match here, Dave, Jerry Seinfeld and Martin Short once had a conversation on the show Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee about losing it. And they say, no one tells you that you've lost it when you get to a certain standing. And when you realise yourself, you've lost it for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about Chris Jericho at the minute. I just feel, for one, he looks fucking awful. Like, he looks absolutely dry. I know he wants to be a rock star in the 80s. He doesn't need to look like Vince Neil now. Like, he looks horrendous. I honestly think, see if he cut his hair short again, went back to wearing trunks, I think he'd look fine. I honestly think he'd look fine. Not everyone needs to be, you know, eight-pack ripped, but Chris Jericho looks horrendous at the minute.
I mean, age is catching up with him a little bit, but it's, to be fair, he actually got a pretty decent storytelling match out of Ricky Starks, if I'm being honest. Like, Jericho Appreciation Society was banned from ringside, and yet Sammy Guevara made an appearance at some point just to cause a distraction. And I don't understand why Jericho didn't just get disqualified by that point, because it's almost like AEW's, you know, bending their own rules a little bit just for the sake of storytelling or shenanigans. And it's like they can't even stick to their own rules. It's ridiculous sometimes. But all in all, I'll say I think this was a good way for a seasoned veteran to put over a rising star in AEW. You know, Ricky Starks has sort of broken out on his own a little bit, and I have that's not gone unnoticed, especially from, you know, a casual AEW viewer like myself. He's certainly working his way up the ranks, and I think a solid win over Jericho is definitely a good stepping stone for him, because I'm almost reminded of when Chris Jericho faced Evan Bourne. I think it was at Fatal 4-Way 2010, and Bourne ended up winning that match just for the sake of, I think, Jericho wanting to put over a fast-rising star. But obviously, we know what happened with the Evan Bourne character. I mean, yeah. Matt Sydal obviously returned to AEW at some point, but I mean, what could have been with Evan Bourne? It's
well, I did. Funny you mentioned Evan Bourne, because I did laugh when when Excalibur said Ricky Starks joins an exclusive list of people that have a victory over Chris Jericho. What? His thing for about 4 years was putting over new guys. He was jobber to the Stars and yeah, done that for about 4 years.
But basically, Ricky Starks is in the same club as Fandango now.
Yeah, Fandango and Evan Bourne have a pay-per-view match over Chris Jericho. Look, Ricky Starks, I see what they're trying to do. I don't get it. I watched him on the media scrum after I fell asleep. He looks like a star, but he's a good wrestler. He's a good in-ring wrestler, but this is the thing these days. A lot of people are really good in-ring wrestlers because the style has changed of wrestling. The wrestling style has changed, and there are better places for people to learn their trade, and there's more places for people to hone their craft, which does mean being just a good wrestler doesn't cut it anymore. You're going to need a personality, and as bad as Jericho looks right now, he still has a personality and is still sensational on the mic. Starks isn't on that level, and yeah, I asked Grant about this because my stream cut out at the start of the pay-per-view, and it came back on for the next match. I had to rewatch this match the next day. And I asked him, I went, I've managed to avoid spoilers. How was it? And he just said, it was a decent match. It was there. It was a Chris Jericho match at this point. And that's just how I feel about Chris Jericho at this point. It's... yeah, AEW is better. That's what I'm going to say. AEW is better than Ricky Starks. And I think AEW needs to move away from leaning on Chris Jericho, because he's far too present in the product. And even though he's not at the stage of a Kurt Angle or Undertaker, he is still, he's 52 years old. He's 53 this year. It's time to move away from Chris Jericho.
Yeah, Ricky Starks needs to move on from Jericho Appreciation Society. Now, he's made his claim against a seasoned veteran. It's time he, you know, maybe focuses on winning a championship now, possibly maybe go for the TNT championship after Powerhouse Hobbs has used his brass ring.
Yeah, I think so. Well, if Powerhouse Hobbs wins it, there is the built-in storyline with those two as well.
Absolutely, yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I think Ricky Starks is someone who does need a storyline behind him, because at the minute, just I beat Jericho and Jericho's upset and wants a rematch. that's not a storyline. Match number three on the card: Jungle Boy versus Christian Cage, the final burial. This is a feud that, if circumstance went in the way it went in favor of AEW, they would have been able to, you know, sort of do this, finish this up by a Full Gear in November. Unfortunately, Christian got injured. Jungle Boy ended up having a he's not with him, a feud with Luchasaurus. Christian Cage back to sort of finish off the feud. Not a great build to this, but I thought this match was quite good. I liked that they were talking about how Jungle Boy doesn't have that killer edge, and then the fact that he hit him with the concerto and then threw him in the coffin and looked him dead in the eye as he closed the lid, I thought that was quite good. It gave Jungle Boy a bit of an edge. And yeah, a match that was good, but a feud that was poor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the feud was definitely poor. Although I'm not sure a final burial match was in the best taste, given that, you know, there has been mockery of, you know, Jack Perry's dad, Luke Perry, the great.
I think that played into it. I think, like,
yeah. Even still, though, should you bring a family member's death just for cheap heat? It's kind of like what they did with Eddie Guerrero, you know, Randy Orton using Eddie's death for cheap heat in his feud with Rey Mysterio back in 2006. Like, people criticize, you know, using like dead celebrities or other dead wrestlers for cheap heat, and yet nobody seems to be making a peep on this one. It just seems a little bit hypocritical.
I think on that front, I do get what you mean. Like, you know, the famous one was Charlotte Flair's brother, Reed Flair, when Paige referenced, and Reed's mother wasn't told about this, and then unfortunately it happened, and it was like, oh my God. I think being Jungle Boy's father, and being the fact that he's obviously got to clear it, and the fact that Batista has since came out and said about the Eddie Guerrero cheap heat, that Eddie would have been absolutely fine with that. Eddie Guerrero was, you know, a consummate professional, grew up in the business, knows, you know, you do anything to get a crowd reaction. So I think it depends on the angle, and it depends on if the performer themselves is okay with that sort of thing. It's like in everything, it's all about the perspective and how it's done. And I don't have a problem with it, because Christian was trying to come across as a despicable heel. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I have no problem with that. Something that I put in my notes, and I did like the fact that Jungle Boy did have a bit of an edge in this match, but compared to the other pillars of AEW, Jungle Boy, I don't buy into him. I don't know what it is, but MGF in the media scrum after said about Sammy Guevara, Jungle Boy, and Darby Allin, we all know there's only one pillar that holds up this place. And Jungle Boy's not done enough for me. Hopefully, not being lumbered with this feud due to Christian's injury means that he's going to be able to move on from it. But I think he needs to move on, and move on quickly. There can't be any lull period. There needs to be
It's done. He's laid it to rest now. Like, and I like how, you know, Jungle Boy even was almost creasing at the fact that he actually had to concerto Christian, because it just didn't have that in him. Because, and it just goes to show, you know, he's definitely meant to be more of a sympathetic character, a little bit, someone with a good heart. You just wouldn't expect to do such a dastardly move, but it almost felt necessary to get rid of someone that's been plaguing him for so long. But yeah, you're right. The feud was messy, but I suppose it did have a pretty satisfying conclusion watching the, you know, it, what eventually was a casket match or a buried alive match, like the final bit towards, you know, when they were at the casket itself, you know, using the shovel as in a sort of crossface or an STF type hold, I thought that was pretty unique. But yeah, the concerto finish as well, I think that was a bit of a homage to Edge as well. And I just kept thinking, you know, I'm kind of reminded like of Joe Hendry's latest TNA music video that he did on Matt Cardona and Kurt Hawkins, where they basically called him Edge's bitch. Like, I kind of got that same impression with Christian a little bit after being hit with the concerto. It's like, now you're Edge's bitch kind of thing.
I did like that Christian wrestled the match and he cut off Turtleneck. I thought that was hilarious.
He's probably been reading Andy Mitchell's wardrobe.
Yeah. What I will say about Christian Cage in AEW, and yes, he has his injury problems, but he was there for quite a while. I remember when folks said that Christian having an Impact title run meant that he was right to go to AEW and not just remain in WWE. How is that? How is being booked in a sister? He essentially sent out on loan. So how is doing well in a different company proof that he should have went to AEW? Like, it just...
Makes no sense.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Impact did a great job with Christian Cage. AEW hasn't used him to the best of the ability, and he's essentially slid into the Chris Jericho / Kane role of putting over the new talent. And yeah, let's move on to possibly match of the night for me. The House of Black, Malakai Black, Brody King, Buddy Matthews, going up against Omega, Matt Jackson, and Nick Jackson of the Elite. Six-man tag match for the AEW World Trios Championship. No complaints here. This was absolutely sensational. This is what we want from the Trios title. Two actual teams of three who work well together and who put on an absolutely sensational match. The gif that's been going around the internet, Buddy Matthews hitting the big knee on Nick Jackson as he tries to do the Meltzer driver, absolutely sensational. And it's nice to see the House of Black with some gold round their waist.
Yeah, it's about time as well, given that, you know, Malakai Black, Brody King and Buddy Matthews are finally getting their dues after, you know, what it looked like, you know, House of Black was about to fade to black with Malakai having gone away for some time. But it's really, really good to see that they're finally getting a bit of exposure against, you know, arguably the most prominent team that AEW has to offer in the Elite. So, but that Buddy Matthews knee on, was it Nick that ate it?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. I could watch that over and over, but it just goes to show how vastly underappreciated Buddy Matthews is. The guy is outstanding at what he does, and he never got his due in WWE. Maybe got a half decent run with the cruiserweight title, but he could have easily been United States or Intercontinental Champion, even given Roman Reigns a run for his money, for crying out loud. I mean, to see him finally, you know, getting somewhere with, not just on his own, but as part of a faction, that's what I really appreciated the most. And, you know, the storytelling from the super kick party to the near misses with the fade to black. And, you know, Brody King, you know, I mean, for a guy his size, he's incredibly agile in a lot of ways, you know, doing tope suicidas and dives to the outside. They just matched everything the Elite was throwing at them. This was a really, really good match to watch. And it wasn't that long for, you know, a traditional tag team match either. Like, in the grand scheme of things, you know, when you look at NXT or some of the other AEW pay-per-views as well.
Yeah, 18 minutes long that was. So, House of Black now with the titles. Where does this leave the Elite? We'll talk about, obviously, the tag title scene. There is a new challenger coming into that. So I think Matt and Nick Jackson will need to take a back seat for a while.
I hope not. They're on me and Gary's draft team, so maybe they could go after the...
Take some time off, guys.
Nah. Go after the ass boys.
But Kenny Omega being the subject of interest from WWE confident they can get him. A lot of people in agreement that Kenny Omega's 3-year stint, as it should be, there was a good world title run in there and a period out with injury. Kenny Omega was mentioned quite a bit during the presser by MGF confronting Dave Meltzer, saying, who's the best wrestler in the world? Is it Kenny Omega? Is it Kenny Seven Stars? Is it? And kept mentioning Kenny Omega's name.
I like that interaction.
Do you think Kenny Omega moves into the world title scene heading to All Out at the end of May? And is he the next challenger for MGF? Because MGF, we talked privately about our thoughts. I think he has had some seriously good matches, and he did have a good Iron Man match with Bryan Danielson. Mm-hmm. I think if he gets in there with Kenny Omega in the main event of Double or Nothing.
Double or Nothing, yeah.
They will put on a sensational showing together. And I think being back in the main event picture is going to be used as a tool to try keep Kenny in AEW.
I think that's the way it seems to be going, especially with MJF running his mouth about Kenny Omega in the press conference. It almost makes sense, you know, it sets up a new challenger. And I don't think we've seen MJF and Kenny Omega go one-on-one in AEW before. So I'd be pretty keen to see that. And given how well he did against Danielson for 60-plus minutes, I reckon you'd be surprised at how much of a good contest those two could put together. But yeah, MJF needs a new challenger. The Bucks could obviously go back and challenge for the regular tag titles, let the Trios titles go to some of the other factions, etc. Yeah, I think I would be down with seeing MJF versus Kenny. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that was a great match. And if it is used to write the Elite out of the six-man title picture, then fair play. You know, I have no complaints. And you mentioned some of the other factions. Who would you like to see House of Black go up against next?
Ooh, see, that's tricky because actually, you know what? Death Triangle. Give them another shot at it.
I think he's out injured at the minute. Pac. They have been doing the six-man tag sort of things with Mark Briscoe, so why not?
How about Best Friends? Orange Cassidy, Danhausen, or maybe Trent and Chuck Taylor?
Why not? Trent, Chuck Taylor, and Danhausen, I'd like to see...
Or Trent, Chuck Taylor, and Orange Cassidy?
No, I'd like to see Cassidy do the, what do you call it?
Atlantic.
Stay with the All-Atlantic Championship.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we know the situation with the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championships, Jay Briscoe unfortunately passing away. Would it be, you know, Supercard of Honor, WrestleMania weekend, mm-hmm. looking to crown new Ring of Honor World Tag Champions? The Bucks of Youth have been the Ring of Honor World Tag Champs before.
Mm-hmm.
Could they possibly be moved over to Ring of Honor for a bit, just to maybe re-establish those tag titles?
Probably. Although, we wouldn't get draft points as a result. So.
I'm not asking about your draft.
Wait, me and Gary have got like a...
You've got a show for that. It's called Saturday Draft Live. I listen to it.
Right, that's my one plug for Central now, because, you know, this and Central are the only shows you hear nowadays.
Exactly. The workhorse.
Actually, you know what? That's not true. We say East Meets West has also been out there as well.
Anyway, we'll not dive into that. Anyway, the women's triple threat match for the AEW World Women's Championship. Jamie Hayter going up against Saraya and Ruby Soho. Shortest match on the card. Also, worst match on the card for me. Absolutely dire. Stephen, in the build-up to this, said, try convince me Saraya's run in AEW has been a success. You will fail miserably. Saraya and Toni Storm have done nothing in shoot interviews and outside interviews about how they hated where they were in WWE and how they thought they should have been treated better and how, you know, Paige, the ex-Paige wanted release from her contract. They wouldn't let her go. But why isn't it the gimmick now that they are Hall and Nash from 1995? they are not WWE outsiders. They are not, you know, the kayfabe curtain is not there anymore. You know, we don't think you're still in WWE. We know you've came here and you've made it clear that you weren't happy in WWE. So now, why is this feud, you know, being built around that? Also, I will say this, and this is why it was the worst match. Not because of the build-up, even though the build-up was dire like a lot of these matches. Had this been a straight-up Saraya Ruby Soho match, I thought it would have been a good match. But Jamie Hayter, I'm sorry, she is another overrated AEW women's wrestler showing why she didn't make it in WWE.
Oofed.
If you're in NXT, you get a fair crack of the whip. I'm sorry if you don't think that, but I do. The NXT system is designed to essentially let the cream rise. And yeah, occasionally people fall through the cracks and some people don't get their fair shot. I think she did. And it's another reason why you shouldn't be hoovering up every ex-WWE talent. And considering Britt Baker is on the outside, I don't know if she's injured at the minute, but it just seems this weird thing in AEW where Britt Baker is constantly the best women's wrestler in that company, certainly the most over women's wrestler in that company, and she is constantly moved away from the title picture but kept on the card in other lesser roles. It's as if, oh, well, we can't have you as champion all the time, but we want to keep you on TV. You can't be half pregnant. Either she's a Charlotte Flair character, where she's always in the title hunt, or she's a Bryan Danielson in WWE. That's the best. I couldn't think of a women's example. Where Bryan Danielson could go up to the main event card, but then come down into the United States title picture, or the IC title picture, or have a non-title feud that got people invested. So, yeah, this whole just being on the outside while Jamie Hayter gets her shot, I'm sorry. Jamie Hayter's had her shot. She's not good enough.
Again, you know, it's odd booking in the women's division when you thought, you know, they're finally getting somewhere. And it seems a lot of these ex-WWE people just don't seem to be hitting their stride, you know, with Saraya, Toni Storm and Ruby Soho. All of them are now a faction now after, I think it was Ruby that ate the pin. And then she turns on,
yeah,
on Jamie Hayter, aligns herself with Saraya and Toni. I'm not really sure what they're doing now with the AEW women's title, because Dr. Britt Baker is still, I think, the A-list female superstar in AEW. I think Jamie Hayter is just sort of like, she's still seen as almost like the sidekick a little bit, but who's just getting her go with the big gold belt, effectively.
It's,
I can't really comment much else on it, unfortunately, because, you know, we've said it before in the past, the women's division booking it's been a mess since day one. A slightly tidier mess at times, but still a bit of a mess.
Yeah, I think I wasn't invested in this. I thought the story was crap. I thought the match quality dipped, and it dipped when it was Jamie Hayter. Saraya and Ruby Soho in there were really good together. But yeah, Jamie Hayter, not for me. Let's move on to the death match, because this was great. This was the second longest match on the card at 24 minutes, 45 seconds. Vince McMahon once described AEW as blood and guts. Well, this is an absolutely prime example of that, but in a good way. This was great. This was a great, gory match. Two guys taking it to the absolute extreme. And two guys who, the feud was quite simple on paper. I don't like you, you don't like me, let's knock 10 shades of shit out of each other.
Yeah, this was the one I was looking forward to the most. Because I think ever since Hangman's been out with the concussion, I've been really, really looking forward to see Moxley and Hangman go at it. And it's... I've only seen a handful of Texas Death matches as well, but AEW certainly loves to do them. But yeah, this had all the makings of just two guys who simply do not like each other. Like, almost shades of Gargano and Ciampa, but on steroids a little bit from TakeOver New Orleans. I mean, because, you know, almost like a few minutes in, you know, they brought out the barbed wire, Moxley starts bleeding as per usual. But some of the spots, you know, the creativity was excellent. And even what I also liked is that there were some shades of Moxley's past coming back as well. You know, he brought in the two bricks. He curb stomps Hangman on the bricks as well. Shades of when Seth Rollins did it to Ambrose back in 2015 to write him off TV for a bit while he went and did a film. Like, I thought that was a really nice touch to it. But the use of barbed wire, you know, there was the creativity behind it. It was, you know, wrapping it around the chairs, wrapping it around each other. That back rake, though, from the top rope, and just given where the camera angle was, that was just painful to watch. Not to mention, you know, when Hangman got pushed off the top to that barbed wire board to the outside, he almost missed it as well, which I thought, ow, that's going to hurt. But the finish, I mean, what a creative way to finish. You know, literally like hanging him from the top rope with a chain, like Hangman living up to his gimmick, but like literally, but just taking it to the extreme and have Moxley tap out rather than get knocked out. That, yeah, I was not expecting Moxley to tap out. You know, I would have expected him to get knocked out.
Yeah, I've seen people complaining about that online. It's like, the man was being hung by his neck.
With a chain?
Yeah, like, of course he was going to tap out. Like, not. This is something, and it happens far too often in modern wrestling, the passing out, refusing to tap out thing. You know, it's not going to make the next Stone Cold Steve Austin, so stop trying it. Like,
Yeah,
the stupidest one I remember was Rusev, you know, passing out John Cena, whose motto was never give up. That's fine. But then when he did it to Ryback, you were like, right, come on now, let's be serious here. Let's let's take it serious and not take the, you know what.
Yeah. Just do what he did to Kalisto, just roll him up like a pretzel.
But yeah, I loved the Buckeye onto the, not the Buckeye, the Deadeye,
yeah.
Onto the bricks. I loved the fact that he didn't wait for him to get into the ring, which is a bit of realism that I wish would come out more. People who don't like each other, they're not going to let you do your full entrance and get hyped up in the crowd. They're going to come out and punch you in the mouth, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah.
Only one thing, and it's a minor complaint, and it's not just this match, it's every match, because they tried it in the Kyle O'Reilly Adam Cole feud, where they try to wrap their leg and wrap their fist in chains.
Yeah,
the barbed wire, it's barbed wire, it hurts. It's sharpened steel. Like, put it on somebody's flesh and it'll rip. Stop trying to wrap it round your leg for a super kick, or put it round your torso. It looks shit. You may as well jump off.
It did look really sloppy when they were trying to do it.
You may as well do it with a hula hoop. It would have the same effect. But yeah, a great match. The third best match, I think, on the card. I enjoyed it. Good. It was something different, you know what I mean?
Although Texas Death Match isn't really different in AEW, though.
No, I mean on this pay-per-view, on this card.
All right, yeah. Like, change of pace.
Yeah, change of pace, which is brutal and gory. Next up, the TNT championship match, Samoa Joe and Wardlow. They guys have both suffered from stop-start booking here. There was a reaction for Joe, and I was talking to David Campbell about this. I said, Joe was being cheered because of who he is and what he's done before. Wardlow, however, is now either getting booed or getting no reaction whatsoever, which is a crime considering where he was and where he was positioned after the MGF feud. But, you know, Joe lost the title for 28 days to Darby Allin, which I think was just to get a hometown pop for Darby Allin, to then win it back. I thought that was pointless. Joe is a double champion, so he should have been treated as such. But yeah, I think here, this match was quite simply just to
big separate the side. Meat.
Say it again? Yeah, big meaty men slap meat.
Slap and eat, yeah.
And not even in a good way. Bummy. But I think this was just to separate the titles, move Joe back over to the Ring of Honor roster, and yeah, get him ready for Supercard of Honor WrestleMania weekend. And let Wardlow
winning by sleeper hold as well, almost like a coquina clutch, and making Joe pass out as well. I mean, definitely a unique finish, because, you know, there's no way he's going to hit Samoa Joe with, you know, the big power bomb, or let alone 10 power bombs like he did to MJF. But yeah, very odd choice of finish, but again, it was just sort of like a meh match for me. Because Wardlow, I think, has pretty much solidified himself as a mid-carder at this point. But why he's getting booed, though, I'm confused about. Because people were cheering for him to break out as a single star, and he's doing that, and he's got the TNT title back. I mean, what more could you ask for?
Yeah, it's
fickle. It's a
weird, fickle, yeah, but is one word, but I can't blame fans for losing interest when the AEW model is shiny new toy, shiny new toy, shiny new toy. Remember this guy from 4 months ago? Like, I don't remember the guy from 4 weeks ago. it wasn't a bad match. It wasn't, you know, I don't hate any of the guys in it, but I just felt both deserved better. And the build up to it, Wardlow's father passed away from cancer. He grows his hair out in a ponytail to have a connection to his dad. Joe cut his hair. They didn't tell you that story before. They told you that story after. So, like, surely if this was, like, a big part of Wardlow's identity and we knew it going in, like a luchador's mask sort of thing,
yeah,
it would have been so much, like, the heat that Joe would have got from that, it just felt sort of, I'm not saying it's fake at all. I'm not saying it's a fake story. What I'm saying is it sounds like something that's been shoehorned in afterwards when you do it after the fact. Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's, you know, if they gave us that, you know, it would make the cutting of the ponytail definitely more shocking, or the matte bun, shall we say.
Yeah. On an enjoyable semi-main event, a Fatal 4-Way Tag Team match for the AEW World Tag Team Championships. The world's greatest tag team from the greatest seed, the Guns, Austin and Colton, defending their titles against the Acclaimed and that Judas Billy Gunn. Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal and Orange Cassidy and Danhausen. A fun Fatal 4-Way, as I said earlier. It felt like everyone got a chance to get their moment in. You know, they had the strut leading into the scissor with the Guns and Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett. They had Orange Cassidy flipping everyone with his hands in his pockets. Danhausen just being Danhausen, and the Acclaimed, who are continually over. I think you need to be careful here how you book the Acclaimed after this, though, lest we have another Wardlow situation.
No, you're right enough, yeah, but this was I think this was more for entertainment value than, you know, thinking that it's for the tag team championships. You know, you had a few funny spots, Orange Cassidy doing his thing, Danhausen doing his thing, acclaimed still over as anything. You know, the whole doing the whole scissor me daddy with I think it was Jeff Jarrett. There was the spot with the guitar. You know, he missed the guitar spot. Although some involvement from Sonjay Dutt and Satnam Singh definitely made things a little bit more interesting. Why they didn't? Well, suppose you can't get disqualified in a fatal four way, so I can see why they would interfere. You know, create some shenanigans. But I was saying to Jack on Saturday Draft Live, the Guns were probably set to retain. The Acclaimed wouldn't get pinned because they need to look strong. And I think Orange Cassidy and Danhausen were shuffled in at the last minute just so Danhausen could be the one to eat the pin and nobody else gets affected by it.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm kind of glad that, you know, that it was sort of telegraphed a little bit, but I suppose it's a nice filler between, you know, because you need a couple of, you know, couple of matches to tone down the anarchy that was the Texas Death Match before you got into the main event.
Yeah, absolutely. But I really did enjoy it. Let's talk about the main event here. MJF going up against Brian Danielson. Before we move on, at the end, the Gun Club demand respect. That's them beating FTR. They've beaten the Acclaim twice now. They've beaten Orange Cassidy and Danhausen. They just beat Jay Lethal and Double J. When possibly the pop of the night, FTR's music hits.
They
walk down. Let's just say that music, not a patch on. Say yeah. But they walk down to the ring. They have their fists taped up. And they just start going to town on the Guns, absolutely battering both of them. FTR have been, along with Kenny Omega, the focus of contract talks. Rumors that they weren't happy with their position, talking about how they weren't happy that they were voted as Tag Team of the Year, despite not being featured in AEW. AEW featured all the awards they won. And the Pro Wrestling Observer, Pro Wrestling Insider.
Yep, PWI.
Wrestling Observer or PWI, whatever one it was. Whatever marquee magazine it was. They put all their achievements up there, but didn't include FTR. Dax Hardwood was talking about that on his podcast. He wasn't happy about that. Mm-hmm. But it looks like they're back. It looks like they are going after the AEW tag titles. And again, this looks like if we put you back in this tag picture, will you stay?
Mm-hmm. Like, almost like a quid pro quo, almost. You know, we'll give you the title scene, they give you the pursuit of the tag titles again if you stay with AEW. Because wasn't there like a picture going around on Dax's Instagram where it looked like a contract with the WWE logo in the bottom corner, and it was only like a slight snippet of it.
Yeah, it was a piece of paper with a WWE logo on it.
Was that genuine, or was that just trolling, probably?
I think he knew what he was doing.
Mm. Yeah, I just winded people up a little bit.
It's like when John Cena just posts a photo of Kenny Omega.
Mm.
Or posts a photo of Stone Cold, and people are like, what does this mean? It means John Cena was bored.
Or he does like a literal turn of the heel when he's cut a promo and said, how's that for a heel turn?
Yeah. moving on to the main event now, MJF versus Bryan Danielson, 60-minute Ironman match for the AEW World Championship. I think we all have the same opinion about Ironman matches. They are tough to do. And this one is no exception. First 15 minutes, if you've not watched it yet, you can skip. Other than probably the clip you've all seen going round, which I thought was hilarious, MJF throwing a drink over a child. Nothing else happened. MJF yelling at the camera, is that going to cost me a star, Dave? I might not get the Bryan Danielson Award. I thought that was hilarious. Just a side note, I've seen people with a different take on the cup, sorry, the drink being thrown over the child. What's your thoughts on it?
Oh, I laughed, to be honest. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, full-on like aggressive throwing. It was just like, you know, casually spilling, but you could tell it was deliberate. And it's not like he hit the child in the face. It was just over like his shirt or his jeans or something. But there were some rumors going around that it wasn't just like water or anything. Apparently there was alcohol in it.
Yeah, it was his mother's drink.
How could anybody even tell that unless the mother's actually came up, like spoke out and said, "Oh yeah, this was my, I don't know, my vodka and soda or something, yeah, or my gin and lemonade."
Ironically, it made things better for the child. So think about this: you're at a WWE, you're at a WWE show as a child. You know, your favorite superstar is backstage but not booked on the show. This happens, your mother complains to security, and to keep things okay, you get free tickets to the next show and get to meet your favourite wrestler who's backstage. You'd be made up. That's a memory that child's going to have. And when he grows up, he's going to be like, "By the way, wait till you see this. I was on AEW TV." So he's going to be upset for a while, but he's got tickets to this. Tony Khan said, we're going to see more of Marcus here at AEW. And what's going around now is that there's a picture of him and his mother with Powerhouse Hobbs and him holding the brass ring. Mm-hmm. Powerhouse Hobbs is his favourite wrestler.
Yep.
And he's apparently got tickets to this week's Dynamite.
Bloody hell.
Right, so,
it's kind of like... It's kind of like when a few weeks ago on Raw, I think it was Piper Niven that chucked Candice LeRae into the barricade, and unbeknownst to, I think, both of them, I think when she hit the barricade, her foot actually kicked a kid in the crowd. Not what happened to him afterwards, but I imagine he must have got some compensation somehow. But what about more recently on SmackDown, after Rhea Ripley defeated Liv Morgan, you saw that little girl in the crowd was crying. Like, she was only about like 9 or 10 or something, and she ended up getting invited backstage to meet Liv as well. And now she's basically viral on Liv's Twitter feed.
Well, there you go. See, so what people complain about? Fuck this.
It's like
in the front row. You're in the splash zone. It's like at SeaWorld. You get a drug chucked on you or you get knocked into the crowd. It's your own fault.
Aye, it's like kind of like when Capital Punishment, you know, that John Cena fan got a drink poured over him by R-Truth. Like,
that was part of the script.
Yeah, I suppose so. But you've got Angry Miz Girl, you've got Sad Liv Girl, and now you've got MJF Splash Kid.
Yeah, we can move on for this just with a simple Michael Jordan quote, which is "Fuck them kids." Anyway. Brian Danielson gets the first fall around about the 25-minute mark. He then is disqualified. MGF then gets disqualified deliberately as he hits Brian Danielson with a low blow, but that's to his advantage as he's then able to get two quick pinfalls. I quite enjoyed that.
He was using logic. I mean, what a concept.
MGF... going after Brian's neck after multiple attempts to put him down, including a tombstone through the table, dropping him on his head twice with the heat seeker. He gets him for a third fall. Danielson then, 10 minutes to go, submits him with a regal stretch, bit of a callback to obviously what MJF's done.
Blackpool Combat Club.
Yep, and then the match itself ends with MGF just holding on, Danielson absolutely raging that he didn't manage to submit him. We then go into extra time, and listen, this is, like I said, this isn't a complaint of the show, this is a complaint of, they do this all the time. They zoom in when someone is given instructions, like, see when the ref gives the Money in the Bank contract over and you can hear the ref going, "Da da da da, is cashing in his Money in the Bank contract," and you're like, Like, don't show me that. I want to hear it from the ring announcer. But oh fuck, like, he's cashing in. But you get the thing through. It's Tony Schiavone. He goes down and does it, and it's the Tony Khan will not allow this match to end. Like, piss off, Tony. Piss off. Like, ever putting yourself over. Simply put, ladies and gentlemen, this pay-per-view will not end in a draw. We are going to go to sudden death. You know, do that. Don't just your Lord and Savior, Tony Khan, is making sure that you enjoy your pay-per-view. Piss off.
Didn't Justin Roberts as well have a nickname as well, like the Dapper Yapper?
No, the Dapper Yapper.
Dapper Yapper, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, so...
it's like they've got a nickname for everybody over there.
Yeah, not a fan of that. Was a fan of the finish. MGF finding the oxygen tank. Brian Danielson's head appears over him as he's trying to bring him back into the ring. Hits him with the oxygen tank. Throws it under the ring. I mean, I know it's pro wrestling and the pro wrestling referees are worse than those in the SPFL, but... I mean, Daniel Bryan's head is about the size of a football. You need to use your full armed reach to hold one of those oxygen tanks. Did you not see the blue things come out at the side? Like, how did you miss it? And it makes a distinctive dong sound. He throws it under the ring. The ref looks like, will no evidence. Like, cut the sense. Although, in fairness, is now that I'm slating Bryce Remsburg, is that his name?
Maybe, yeah, Bryce.
I did like the fact that when MGF went to hit Brian, he stood to the side and went, on you go. Like, what? On you go. You hit him, I give him the title. And then when he's in the submission move, MGF's trying to get the diamond ring, and it's just a sort of yoink as he takes it off his finger. That was quite good in extra time.
Very good comedy moments, yeah.
You talked about earlier AEW forgetting their own rules. You can't be disqualified in a fatal four-way. There was interference galore, and then Jeff Jarrett goes to hit somebody with a guitar, and Aubrey Edwards, who by the way is the worst referee out there, no, second worst referee, it's the small Italian guy in WWE, I hate him. Not because he's Italian, I know he's Italian. he's just a bad ref. Yeah, he's exceptionally bad. She is horrendous. She takes the guitar off him. What are you doing? It's no DQ. But anyway, back to the main event. That was something in my notes I'd forgot to rant about. MGF taps out Bryan Danielson. A great end to a great match, I thought. I spoke to you about this before we came on air. The tribalism with AEW fans, I feel that every match they have has to be the best ever, and it was an envelope pushing match, and it's better than anything WWE done. It's match of the year already. It was a good 35 minute to 45 minute match squeezed into 65 minutes. There's a lot of filler there. Iron Man matches are hard to do. MGF has great matches, as he talked about in the presser. MGF can go, but I don't think he has the capabilities yet to pull off a 60-minute Iron Man match. And I didn't see the hype surrounding this sort of thing, given that there was better matches on that card, I thought. I just didn't feel that it was worthy of the amount of praise it got. Also on that hand, though, I don't think it's as bad as people making out. Like, I didn't have a patch on this and didn't have a patch on Shawn Michaels' Bret Hart's Iron match. I'll say this to you now. Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, 60 minutes with no falls. It's fucking boring. Okay. Tell them that. It was not better. The best Iron Man match, and I know you're going to say it's Brock Lesnar versus Kurt Angle because you're a wee ruthless aggression kid.
I am, but yeah.
The best Iron Man match ever is The Rock Triple H Judgment Day 2000.
Yeah, I mean, hard to argue that, I suppose.
And just throwing it out there, John Cena versus Randy Orton was better than this as well. But
yeah, I agree. But bear in mind that one was anything goes. So you could you couldn't get a win by disqualification. And one thing I will note about that match, there was a 30-second cooldown period between falls in that match. So definitely zero consistency with Iron Man matches throughout. Particularly, you know, I think that was evidenced, you know, around the 26-minute mark when, you know, there were three, MJF got essentially two points in the space of 5 seconds.
Yeah, I'm looking at the times here, 26:35, Danielson picks up a decision via disqualification, 26:43, MJF rolls him up, 26:46, MJF pins him immediately after.
Mm-hmm. Basically, yeah, it went from 0-0 to 2-2 in the space of less than 90 seconds.
There was a time Triple H went up on The Rock in that Iron Man match, and I think The Rock pulled it back, and he was closing in on. I think he was either one behind or he went ahead. I can't remember exactly. I'm looking it up just now, but Triple H risked a DQ to hit The Rock in the head with the chair to then immediately pin him, which meant he retained his lead, which I thought was the smartest thing any wrestler has ever done, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was 5-5. And then Triple H... Oh, no, sorry. It was 3-3. The Triple H got disqualified for attacking Rock with a steel chair. Then about 30 seconds later, he got a pinfall.
Yeah. Because Triple H goes 3-1 up, Rock goes 3-2, comes back. So then Triple H hits him with a chair to then pin him immediately after, mm-hmm. which I thought was great. And then immediately after goes on the offense and makes him pass out to a sleeper, which I thought was great. Coming out of this with the media scrum, we mentioned Double or Nothing is on May 28th, I believe. Just looking at the dates here.
Double or Nothing is, May 28th in Paradise, Nevada.
Yeah, I think that's their thing. They always go back to Las Vegas for Vegas, for what's like sort of their WrestleMania, the way they build to it.
Mm.
You know, All Out started it, but that's their sort of WrestleMania weekend now.
Can I just say as well, like the amount of times that the number of bumps Danielson took on his head and neck during that match was often uncomfortable to watch, given that, you know, he was tombstoned twice, one through broken table rubble and the other from the middle rope. I mean, I watched those and I winced because even just the shot with the oxygen tank was, it just made me think, you know, hello, do you not know this is a guy who spent 2 years on the shelf with concussion and neck issues and was out for best part of a year getting neck surgery? I just don't like it when guys were out for that long due to neck injuries and concussions taking bumps like that. And they definitely pushed the envelope with those. And, you know, just because, you know, it's pushing the envelope doesn't make it automatically an all-time great, you know, because it's taboo or because, you know, it's if people know the history of these people's injuries and stuff, it doesn't change the fact, you know, it's still a very, very risky spot.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I agree with that. It's again, though, I can't put the onus of that on AEW because Bryan Danielson goes out there and he does all this stuff. You know, it's on him, sort of thing. He's the one that chooses to wrestle this style and not veer from the style he's always done. But yeah, it's a double-edged sword. You can either say WWE's toning him down by refusing to let him do that, and if you're going to refuse to let him do that, it's pointless. But then you could also play it as, oh, well, AEW has a responsibility to its employees. At the end of the day, you can tell them one thing once they're out there. It's not as if Tony Khan can come out and go, yeah, no, back, come backstage. We're not doing that. Like, you know, so I do agree, but a lot of the stuff was cringy considering his neck issues. But unfortunately, you just kind of have to take it as it comes. I thought this was a good pay-per-view. The good matches were good. The filler, thankfully, has come to an end. Everything bar the women's championship match will probably be finished up here. I'd give it a 7 out of 10 pay-per-view. I don't think it's anywhere. I've seen people saying it's one of the best professional wrestling pay-per-views of the past 10 years and one of the best main events of the past 10 years. Mm-hmm. It's not close for me.
No.
I think it's a good main event. I think you have good matches on there. The Fatal 4-Way Tag Match, the Texas Death Match, the 6-Man Tag, and even the Final Burial Match was a good match despite the build being poor. And Wardlow and Joe and Starks and Jericho, despite not being great feuds in the build-up, weren't exactly terrible matches. So I'd say a solid 7 out of 10 pay-per-view.
Yeah, I agree. It's, again, it just goes back to tribalism again. I mean, it was a good show, don't get me wrong. But it's, like most AEW shows, I think it's just overhyped a little bit. I wouldn't...
Absolutely.
I'd probably watch the Iron Man match again if it was for a wrestling mixtape show or something, but...
I would watch it from 15 minutes in.
Yeah, it's because, as you said, the first 15, 20 minutes, you could have skipped that and you wouldn't have missed anything, apart from maybe MJF pouring the drink on the child, but that's the only thing worthy of watching the first 25 minutes for. I would, to be honest, I've said this to you before we restarted, I would have rather watched Gunther Sheamus at Clash at the Castle again, if I'm brutally honest.
Yeah. Match length doesn't always equal match quality. Mm-hmm. Before we move on,
so what you're saying is length doesn't matter.
Yes. It's a saying I've told my fiance for years. Anyway, heading into All Out, who do you want to see going for certain titles? It's Double or Nothing, Jesus Christ. I can never get AEW pay-per-view names right. I always get Full Gear and Revolution mixed up as well. Going into Double or Nothing, who would you like to see fight for the AEW championship? Who would you like to see go after the women's championship? And what would you like to see heading in there? Who would you like to see get more of a spotlight heading into AEW's biggest show of the year?
Well, you mentioned it earlier, and to be honest, you hooked me on the idea. For the AEW world title, I want to see MJF versus Kenny Omega. Not necessarily in a stipulation match, I just want to see them go traditional one-on-one with 60-minute time limit, even though it only lasts about 20, 25 minutes at most. Just give us that, and, doesn't need to be overhyped. Just give us a solid wrestling match. Put MJF in a position where he really has to dig deep against arguably AEW's best performer. Women's title, fuck knows at this point, if I'm being honest. I think the Jamie Hayter train has just come to a stop a little bit. But you've got Saraya, you've got Toni Storm, you've got Ruby Soho. I wouldn't be against maybe a... Let's have a Fatal 5-Way. Hayter, Baker, Saraya, Ruby, and Toni. And
I wouldn't be against that. I reckon it'd be a good match, and it certainly hide Jamie's shortcomings. But nothing gets me interested in AEW's women division, no matter how hard they try. Just because, they've got Hikaru Shida there. What is she doing? What is she doing? Riho was the next big thing that Kenny Omega wanted to push. And then
has Riho not got back to Japan now?
God knows. You never know with AEW, because this is the issue with stop start. Here's 1,000 championships, and here's 1,000 guys from 1,000 different promotions.
Mm-hmm. Here's someone from New Japan Wrestling that you should all know because you're smart mark fans and stuff who watches every single promotion under the sun.
Yeah, like why should I know these people? Like, why give me a reason to like these people?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's sort of how I feel about the women's. I'm just looking at the women's division here now. So Athena, she came in and then was immediately panned off to the Ring of Honor division. Britt Baker, Bunny, Amy Sakura, Hikaru Shida. Say again?
Julia Hart.
Yeah, Jade Cargill, Jamie Hayter, Julia Hart, Kira Hogan, Lily Gray, Madison Rain. I'm just reading the ones who aren't injured. Marina Shafir, oh God, no. Mercedes Martinez, Nyla Rose, Paige VanZant, oh, she's injured. Penelope Ford, Red Velvet, Riho, she's still there, Ruby Soho, Saraya, Serena Deeb, Sky Blue, Tay Mello, Tony Storm, Willow Nightingale, and Yuka Sakazaki.
Oh, don't try and pronounce that.
Yeah, I'm not going to pronounce that. But yeah, there's a division there, but it's more of a who cares than a who at this point.
AEW men's tag title, Ass Boys versus FTR.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much set in stone, that one. Well, obviously, be keeping an eye on it. But Dave, just before we go, a wee quick 10-minute preview into the WrestleMania card, which is shaping up very, very nicely at this point. WrestleMania at this point, 3.5 weeks away. 3.5 weeks away. Coming up Monday Night Raw last night, we now have 8 matches for... they're not confirmed what night they're going to be taking place on, but so far we have Cody Rhodes going up against Roman Reigns for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship, Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley facing off for the SmackDown Women's Championship, Bianca Belair versus Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship, Brock Lesnar versus Omos in a singles match,
Gunther
going up against the winner of the Fatal 5-Way match this week on SmackDown for the Intercontinental title, Austin Theory versus John Cena for the United States Championship. Seth freaking Rollins going up against Logan Paul in just a straight-up singles match. And in a 6-woman tag match, the women's tag team champions, Lita and Becky Lynch, teaming up with David Campbell's favourite wrestler, Trish Stratus, to take on Damage Control in a 6-woman tag team match. Certainly a great card shaping up there. Let's talk about John Cena, Austin Theory. Austin Theory having to goad John Cena into accepting the match. John Cena telling Theory, you're not ready. I'm going to take everything from you if we step in the ring here. Mm-hmm. This, I don't buy into the whole Cena buried this one, Cena buried that one. I think this, though, is a very much a make or break match for Austin Theory. If he beats John Cena at WrestleMania, you can launch him into the stratosphere. If he loses to John Cena, I don't think he's buried, but I think you've got a comfortable mid-carder for the rest of your career. Mm. Like, I think this match can make or break how big a star Austin Theory is going to be.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think Cena summed it up perfectly because he described it as a lose-lose situation for Theory a little bit. Because, I mean, sure, even if Theory wins, you know, big step up for him if he's beaten the 16-time world champion on the big stage, which would be huge for him. But at the same time, he also mentioned he acknowledged the Raw after WrestleMania crowd, which is the most brutal crowd of the entire year, and they will rip him a new one, regardless if he wins or loses, because he's put himself in a position where everybody thinks he's a bit of a dick and I still think he's a bit of a dick, ever since like he came out as the surprise entrant from Money in the Bank, which he did nothing with afterwards. Even then, getting knocked out by Tyson Fury wasn't enough to, you know.
Can I say on the Money in the Bank?
Yeah.
I think it's the best thing they could have done with Theory.
Cash in and fail on the United States Championship.
Yes, and here's why. We were moving in a new direction. We were moving away from Vince McMahon's WWE. He was very much being painted as a daddy's boy who doesn't have daddy's credit card anymore. And when he lost that, it gave him an edge. It gave him a bit more of a character. He was now going after the US title to prove to himself. He wasn't doing it for the fans. He wasn't doing it to get Vince's approval. He was doing it for himself, and he's been a better character since for it, I think. Mm. And add into the bargain, Roman Reigns' title run, be it to Drew McIntyre at Clash of the Castle or Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania, I didn't want to see Roman lose the title to a cash-in. I didn't want to see him split the titles. It has to be one distinctive fall for that shock value.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever beats Roman Reigns, it needs to hold the title for at least 3 or 4 months after, because you can't just end a historic title run and then have the next guy hold it for 10 minutes. I think you need them to have a bit of a run, at least 150 days with the title. And that meant Austin Theory either main evented WrestleMania against John Cena for one of the belts, in which case I don't want to see that. I want to see John Cena Theory for the US title. Or the timer runs out on Theory, and I didn't want to see that either. So that's just my opinion on it. But John Cena, Austin Theory, looking forward to it. I think it's a make or break match. Let's talk about the host of WrestleMania, The Miz, throwing his weight around and giving us Seth Rollins versus Logan Paul last night. I don't like Logan Paul the celebrity. I think when I praise Logan Paul on here, people think I don't like him, but I do like him as a wrestler, and I like that he's playing a heel now. I like that Michael Cole is going, he's not interested in our business. He's using this for celebrity.
I think promote his prime drink, probably.
Yeah, they had that across the road for me, by the way, a tenner a bottle. I'm like, absolutely fucking not.
It's become the new, you remember rainbow dust that used to be sold at school tuck shops?
Yeah,
that's what that is. People like will pay any amount just to get a swig of it. It was like it's like rainbow-coloured crack. That's what that was.
Right.
I see crime being advertised in some shops on Tucky Hall Street and stuff, but I'd never have been tempted just to go in and see if there was any and how much they were getting sold for. But it was some of those sort of little tacky touristy shops that were displaying it and stuff. And yeah, I wasn't going to be convinced with whatever price they were going to sell it at.
Absolutely not. Seth Rollins, possibly the most over he's ever been. So over that they had to change him from a despicable heel. Going up against the hated celebrity, I think this is a perfect matchup. Mm-hmm. I think this will be a great middle-of-the-card celebrity match at WrestleMania, and I'm hoping that Seth Rollins curb-stomps him through the mat.
I hope so too. And Rollins is good with, you know, being a safe worker with someone who's slightly less experienced than him. You know, we've seen how well he did with Dominic Mysterio at SummerSlam 2021. They got a decent match out of a street fight and they made it work. He could easily do the same with Logan Paul, but you're right about one thing. Like, Logan Paul has taken to the ring like a duck to water. I mean, When you get a really good match out of Roman Reigns in Saudi Arabia, you know he's got a knack for that sort of thing. And he's a trained MMA fighter. He's done boxing. So he knows
He's done boxing. Let's done the equivalent of the people that do charity fights. It's a 6 week training camp and then a boxing match.
He is trained in MMA though, so he does have some experience with combat sport to begin with. It's not like he was coming in as like, you know, an NFL quarterback or a basketballer down in NXT or like a cheerleader if it was from a female side of things. But outside the ring though, bit of a douche, not gonna lie. Yeah. Like,
we'll not get into that.
I'm not interested in his YouTube channel. I'm not interested in his podcast. Not particularly interested in his Prime drink, even though he does do it with KSI, but because they're like besties now.
He's a knob.
Is a knob. Yeah, and you're right, I want Rollins to curb stomp him to high heaven.
Yeah. Let's talk about this match quickly because we'll talk about this match and wrap it up because there's going to be obviously a WrestleMania preview show we do, so we'll get into the big main event matches in depth in the coming weeks here on Central. But let's talk about one that's in the news at the minute, which is Brock Lesnar versus Omos.
Really? Because
apparently Vince McMahon was the one that pushed this through. He wanted this to happen. This was always his sort of big match for Brock Omos. And it looks like Triple H has sort of gave him his toy to distract him from everything else that he's putting on the card.
Yeah, it's Vince's wet dream on this card here. It's the big meaty men slapping meat match, although Lesnar's probably just going to F5 him once and that's it, game over. Maybe German suplex him half a dozen times, fling him around like a wet trackie and just be done with it. You know, I don't see it going any other way except because you've seen Braun Strowman beat Omos at one point, and we've seen Brock Lesnar defeat Braun Strowman with ease. Imagine what he'll do to Omos as well. I honestly don't know what else to say about this match other than, you know, Vince had to weasel his way in for one more big meaty men slapping meat match and, yeah, you know, land of the giants, you know, Brock Lesnar's a wrecking machine. He'll probably decimate Omos limb from limb and it'll only last like a few minutes.
I think this is going to be it's going to be all about the visual. It's going to be, have you ever seen Brock Lesnar manhandled like this before?
Yes, Omos by Braun Strowman.
Yeah, Omos is going to throw him about. And then Brock Lesnar, the visual of just someone the size of Omos being F5'd. Like, no matter how many times he did it to the Big Show, I always thought it looked cool. But yeah, I do get why people aren't into it, but I do, like, that final visual, WWE is about WrestleMania moments. So that visual of a 7'4", 400-pound guy being held up by Brock Lesnar, who isn't the tallest, but he is an absolute machine. Just him F5-ing him will look amazing. But I picture this being a sort of Bobby Lashley almost level match. I'm just looking now. That match went 6.5 minutes. I'd be surprised if we go above 5 minutes for this match.
I agree, yeah. I don't see this going beyond 5 minutes, give or take. And like I said earlier, I think it's just going to be half a dozen German suplexes, maybe two F5s at most, and then, you know, one and done, easy.
Yeah, absolutely. 8 matches on the card so far, 2 nights to fill out. The WrestleMania SmackDown, NXT Stand and Deliver. At time of recording, NXT Roadblock is tonight. So I think we'll, after tonight, have a more clear picture of what the NXT Stand and Deliver card is going to look like. However, we'll get into all that and much, much more. The week of WrestleMania, we will have a full WrestleMania weekend in-depth preview. We're going to be previewing Multiverse United, which is New Japan going up against Impact. We'll be previewing Ring of Honor's Supercard of Honor, all the happenings that are going on in the indie scene, and of course the Big Show itself, not the Big Show, the Big Show. WrestleMania, both nights. I imagine there'll be more matches added, plus the SmackDown before WrestleMania. We always have everyone's favourite match, the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, so I'm sure we all can't wait to see that. But just going to wrap up quickly, thank you very much, Dave, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on.
Not a problem. Just remember, you want to listen to any of our other podcasts, and by other podcasts, I mean the three shows we still do in this network, SDL, East Meets West, and ESSR Central, where you can find them on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, and Android. Just search for Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet. And of course, if you want to get involved in the conversation, at Suplex Retweet, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, you name it, we're on it. Thank you very much for listening. We'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Scott McLeod.
And I'm Grant McGrobby.
We are the hosts of the monthly show on Eat Sleep Suplex Retreat, East Meets West,
where we'll bring you all the latest happenings, reviews and big events from New Japan and the land of the Far East.
You can remember to check that out on the Eat Sleep Suplex Retreat podcast feed on all good Android podcasting sites like Anchor, Spotify or iTunes now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.